This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we are speaking with Jeremy Lund and Rob Koons. Both are active angel investors and co-sponsors of the Park City Project, a business accelerator run by both Pando Labs and Boom Startup. Business incubators have been around for decades, but frankly, they've had mixed results at best. In 2005, that all changed. An entrepreneur named Paul Graham believed young, technically savvy people, folks he calls hackers, could be taught many of the secrets of building a successful company over just a three-month period. Graham's accelerator, called Y Combinator, has helped launch several of the most successful startups of the last decade, including Dropbox, Airbnb, and Stripe, as well as many other companies you may not have heard of, but that have delivered insane results and returns for Y Combinator, such as Heroku, which sold to Salesforce.com and resulted in an estimated 400 times return for Y Combinator's investment. Rob and Jeremy are hoping to replicate that kind of success for Utah startups. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on The Bottom Line.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us, Doug.
So, Rob, let's start with you. You and John Richards started Boom Startup in 2010, and 1 year later, you were named one of the top 15 accelerators, incubators in the nation. Tell us what an accelerator is and how that's different from the incubators of the 90s that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, that's a great question, Doug. So primarily the incubator model that we all know about earlier was really about having physical space and co-location. And it was a place where companies and founders could go to get together. And it was really a real estate play, actually. The investors that own the real estate place created these kind of incubators really to get their rents kind of, you know, covered in the long term. So when the accelerator model came out, basically, the difference is the accelerator model has really three kind of really key components. One is it actually has a cash investment. So the accelerator, whoever is operating the accelerator will make basically a cash infusion anywhere between $20,000 to $50,000 in each of these individual companies. And then the second thing is the accelerator model is also usually mentorship driven. So there's a series of 35 to 50 mentors that are going to be actually working hand in hand and helping these companies. And then the third piece of the accelerator model is a partnership with about 100 different companies that want to team together and provide value in kind services for these companies. So these are things like Rackspace, for example, will make a $24,000 contribution to those companies. So they don't have to worry about taking an investor's money and spending that.
Great. So I mentioned in the opening a couple companies here. I mentioned Dropbox, which is Drew Houston. He was 24 when he started Dropbox. He's now 33. Airbnb, the founder there was 26. He's now 33 years old. Stripe, I kind of stretched a little bit there. Stripe really is not a Y Combinator deal, but the two founders of Stripe, John Collison and Patrick Collison, started a company through Y Combinator a few years earlier called Octomatic. John Collins at the time was 17 years old. And as of January, Stripe has a $1.7 billion valuation. Both brothers are still under 30. Aaron Levy is founder of Box. It's got a $2 billion plus valuation. He started Box when he was 22. And, you know, never in the history of the country or really the world have folks in their early 20s been able to start multi-billion dollar companies. What's different now that's enabling these kids, really, to build big, substantial companies like this?
Yeah, so I think one thing is most of those companies that you mentioned, Doug, are software technology companies. And so one of the magic things that have happened in the last 10 years is a major shift in the industry. And that's the cost that it takes to create these companies. Historically, it would cost anywhere between $4 to $6 million to build infrastructure and build your servers and all that kind of good stuff. But now with cloud computing being available, open source being available, and all these great other factors that are available, what happens is the cost to start a company has dramatically gone down. So you could actually create any of those companies that you just mentioned for a $50,000 to $100,000 initial seed startup cost. And so that really allows people in the younger generation who maybe don't have enough capital to be able to get in and actually create these companies and then grow and scale them.
And clearly, I think there's been an investor change on what it takes for an entrepreneur, who that secret entrepreneur is that's going to build this big company. I think even 20 years ago, folks thought, you know, you really have to be in your, at least your mid-20s, yeah. if not your late 20s, early 30s. Why do you think we've seen that change take place? Is it just because of the successes, or is there something else that's taking place?
I think there's a couple of things. One is, I think, you know, venture capitalists have actually realized that some of the most successful startups are at that earlier generation. It's this whole shift that we're going through, these different generations where the younger people look at things differently. So they're coming out of, you know, high school going, I'm not going to go to college. And the parents are saying, oh, yes, you are. And they're saying, no, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go do my startup. Oh, no, you're not. Oh, yes, I am. And I think that behavior, that, you know, just generational change, I think that has a lot to do with that. And then the cost of technology coming down, you put those two together. And I think that's why you've really seen a fuel in the overall startups that are basically being created.
Good points. Jeremy, I'm going to switch over to you. So you helped start a firm, a co-location office space up in Park City called Pando Labs. Tell us what Pando Labs is and why you decided to partner with Boom Startup for this accelerator.
Okay. Let me start with, let me explain the analogy first. Pando is the world's largest living organism. And it just happens to be an aspen forest that's in Fish Lake National Park, which is right in the middle of our state. And the only thing that that shares is a common root system, right? You have a whole bunch of individual trees sprouting from the same set of roots. So we use that as an analogy for what we're trying to accomplish up there, which is let's figure out a way to create a root network that's going to help. We really came about it from an economic diversity for Summit County perspective, saying how do we help diversify the economy of Summit County past just the snow industry? But, you know, to us, we can take it to the next level and not only create great companies up there, but also help our nonprofit sector and help our local mom and pop businesses at the same time. When we first started looking at it, we found that there were a lot of incubators that were being started in Utah. Everybody, you know, everybody across the nation right now, incubators are a really hot space and everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. And as we looked into it, I kind of looked at myself and the rest of the people involved in the effort looked at themselves and said, what do we have to give to the incubator space that somebody else isn't currently doing? And couldn't come up with a compelling value proposition, besides the fact that we're located in Park City. So what we decided is to say, hey, what we do have up there, we have a lot of really smart people that are willing to lend some time to startups and to nonprofits. But let's partner with great organizations that already understand how to run an accelerator model and maybe use our real estate and our mentor base to attract some different companies for them, you know, some out-of-state companies that want to be there to ski but might also want to be starting a business at the same time. But how can we do something with our geography and with our mentor base as opposed to let's create yet another incubator from scratch and hope it works?
And the vision for Pando Labs includes having an accelerator, but that's not where it's limited. What are the visions outside of the accelerator?
So my theory, and, you know, we're a startup too. We're still heavily in debt and trying to figure everything out right now. But, you know, my vision is if our core competency is in mentorship and, you know, you have a lot of retired executives up there that have a wealth of knowledge in the back of their heads and they have some spare time and they don't want to spend it all on the golf course and they don't want to spend it all on the ski slope, and they want to give back. And so this is an interesting way to use the same person who can mentor a young company can also help a nonprofit, can also help, you know, the local bread shop. And to the extent that we can help all three of those with the same mentor base, let's figure out a way to do it. I don't know that we'll get there. That's a big vision. We started off with let's partner with Rob and see how we can push that forward. We have, you know, a partnership with Impact Investment Leaders that does social venture investing, and they want to run a cohort up there as well. They're a little bit further behind. Rob hopped in and hit the ground running, and, you know, I think it's fantastic. I'm amazed, actually, that we are where we are in this little time, but that's the way the landscape works. So I have high hopes that we'll be able to do the broader Park City project piece of it. But, you know, that remains to be seen.
You know, one of the things I like about what you're doing at Pando Labs is not everything's defined yet. You're kind of looking at it, as you mentioned, as a startup, right? So there's these little experiments that you're doing along the way. Mm-hmm. Let's see what works, what doesn't work, and you're going to go towards the things that work, which is very much what you'll be teaching young entrepreneurs that they need to do with their companies as well. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Jeremy Lund and Rob Kunz, active angel investors and the creators of a startup incubator in Park City. Rob, let's switch back. I want to talk a little bit more about Boom Startup and the whole accelerator space. Your co-founder at Boom Startup is John Richards, who helped build InfoSpace into one of the most successful online yellow pages back in the mid to late 80s. I'm sorry, 90s. He ended up taking that company public. And John shares a story about how he called Paul Graham. I mentioned Y Combinator at the opening. Paul Graham is the founder of Y Combinator. And John called Paul for some advice, saying, hey, we're thinking about doing this accelerator here in Salt Lake City. And according to John, Paul Graham's response was, you know, why would you want to do this in Utah? Graham's quote is, any good company should come to Silicon Valley. Do you share any of the concern that Graham communicates in that doubt?
No, not at all. And I think it's simple. We've actually proven, right, that we can create billion-dollar companies right across the Intermountain West. And so I think it's no longer where you have to be in Silicon Valley and that's the only place to go. You know, right about the time John was calling Paul Graham, you know, I was doing the same thing talking with David Cohen, you know, my mentor and good friend over at Techstars.
Very different response from Techstars.
Yeah, very different. I mean, it was like, we're doing this. How can we come out and help you, Rob? You know, I actually asked him if we could actually franchise the Techstars brand and do a Techstars Utah or a Techstars Salt Lake. And he said, you know, we're not really looking at that model at this time, but don't get me wrong. We'll do everything at Techstars that we need to do to come over and help you. Like I said, I'll fly over. He goes, I'll mentor you. I'll mentor your team. I'll mentor your mentors. I'll share some of my mentor network. And so completely two different responses basically on that front.
And what about the ecosystem? You know, clearly the Bay Area is the healthiest entrepreneurial ecosystem in the world. I don't think anybody would debate that. But how much harder is it for an entrepreneur that wants to build his business here in Utah? Is it harder? And in what areas do you think it might be harder for him or her?
Yeah, so I think there's two areas that usually those two kind of key factors are where do we get the human capital, right? The technology talent. And so a lot of people in Utah go look around and talent is actually easier to acquire here within the state. And so that's a very important kind of feature. We've seen a lot of companies who have left Utah, gone to Silicon Valley, and actually returned back to Utah because they go out there and it's so competitive, right? So darn competitive. So many companies and the talent out there is so expensive. And so in that case, you know, from a technical talent and a human capital acquisition, it's actually easier to find that talent in Utah. On the other hand, we find companies that have great talent here in Utah, but they can't raise the capital. They can't get the funding that they need to go scale and grow that company. And so therefore, those companies are leaving the state of Utah and going to Silicon Valley and getting funded. And that's kind of a nice thing, I guess, for the companies, right? That they have that option basically from going to another ecosystem to be able to get their company funded. So I think my thought is they both have their pros and cons, and it's kind of really dependent on the company and the founding team of what's the best fitness for purpose for that company at that time.
And I think on the funding side, it's getting better, right? I mean,
yes,
we clearly have some of the top
question.
Tier
yeah.
venture firms
yeah.
watching yeah. very carefully what's going on here in Utah. You mentioned building billion-dollar companies. You know, just in the last 12 to 18 months, we've had three major companies raise rounds at a billion-dollar-plus valuation. We've had Qualtrics, who's been in as a guest on this show, InsideSales.com. Yes. We had David Elkington as a guest, and also, of course, Domo, Josh James's. All three of those companies have raised money at a billion-dollar valuation. In HireVue, not quite at $1 billion yet, but they do have Sequoia as an investor, which is a big venture capital firm. What do you think from a funding standpoint for both of you guys? We need to do as a state, as private investors, to continue that trend and accelerate that?
I think part of it is one thing I've learned kind of over the years in all my angel investing is actually get active in the angel investing outside of the state. Because if I do that, I find I get to carry messages and actually bring up the awareness. So I'm a member in the Boulder Open Angel Forum. In fact, I'm flying out there in 2 weeks. And I'll be looking at companies to kind of do an investment. And I actually use that, although I am going there primarily to look at an angel investment, I actually use it as a platform to communicate to people out of state about all the great things that are happening in Utah and some of the companies. And actually getting some of those companies in Utah to fly to Boulder and actually pitch at the Open Angel Forum, basically. Same thing with Silicon Valley, right? I do, I'm a mentor with 500 startups. And so when I go out to 500 startups and mentor those Silicon Valley companies, I also use that as another platform, right, to bring that awareness up. And
I think
that's really
helped. It is kind
of
bizarre, isn't it? Because a Bay Area VC will hop on a plane and go to LA in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's right.
But to get them to get on an airplane and come out to Salt Lake City, in office to office, it probably takes less time. To get to a place in Salt Lake City. They will stay within the state of California, but really hard to get them outside of the state of California.
I think that's starting to change, though.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I'm just thinking at a recent event I attended up in Deer Valley where we had a lot of the top name VC firms with not necessarily one of their senior people there, but they're at least starting to look at deals. And I think one of the other biggest changes that I've seen, back to the talent question, which I think is always a question here versus, you know, the Bay Area, that's where all the smart guys are, right? And then inevitably they're guys, but that's the way the tech world works at the moment. But I recently had one of my companies just exited to Teradata, which is a multi-billion dollar company. And part of their logic for acquiring the company, they are Silicon Valley based but have a large office in Sandy. And part of the reason they acquired it was to try to make a beachhead in Utah and start to get some of that talent onboarded that is less expensive versus the Bay Area, but equally as qualified. And how do we, you know, tap into that? And part of it was acquiring this company to be able to get into the consciousness here.
Yeah, and I do think the state's fund of funds has been successful, right? I mean, it's been what now, almost 15 years. But if you look at some of the names of the big firms that have come here and written big checks, they're also portfolio investments for the Utah Fund of Funds. So I'm glad to see that.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll talk some more with Jeremy Lund and Rob Kunz, both Utah-based angel investors and entrepreneurs. Welcome back to The Bottom Line at KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Jeremy Lund and Rob Kunz, both angel investors and entrepreneurs and the creators of the Park City Project. We're talking about talent. Let's talk about the accelerator, the type of talent that you're looking to attract to the accelerator. People that are listening to this, who are the folks that you'd be thinking, you know what, I could really benefit from going through this program?
Yeah, so I think from a Boom Startup perspective, we really like to break down and look at the entrepreneur and the company kind of in three different categories, if you will. First is the team. It's really team, traction, and technology. So if you brought that back to an entrepreneur, what that means to them is they have to have built a team around them. So it's not just one person. One of the actually prerequisites at Boom Startup is if you come pitch us and you're a solo founder, you'll automatically get rejected, basically from kind of the whole application process. And what we do is we'll actually hold co-founder meetups and try to get that solo co-founder hooked and connected with another individual. But essentially, we're looking for someone that has a business background on the team and then someone that has a technology background. And that's pretty simple. We found that those two ingredients really make a successful team, especially when you're building a software startup. And so that's something that every kind of founder should look at. The other thing is, on the technology piece, we really want to see entrepreneurs that have created something that has some type of value. It's so easy today, like you were saying, you can go online, you can learn coding schools, right? You can figure out the code, you can build something, you could do a mock-up using Photoshop or Adobe Illustrator. And so you have to be able to come to the table and show us that you actually have capability to either build it yourself or to manage others that could build it for you. And so that's a really, really important kind of skill set. And then the third thing is getting some type of traction. And so what that means is it doesn't mean necessarily you have to have revenue. It could be I went out and talked to 100 people on the street and I have a survey right here and I have their signature on the clipboard and it says of these 100 people I talked to on the street that 35 of them said they would use this software product if I built it. And so that's some type of demonstrable traction that the individual can basically kind of show. So those are kind of the three things that we look at.
And, you know, Park City is obviously known as a snow town. I call it a ski town, but it's also snowboard, obviously. If somebody has an idea in the resort business, in the snow business, is that a match, or are you looking strictly from a technology standpoint?
So we actually are now looking at consumer products. That's a new wave, basically, that's coming into this accelerator model. Historically, we've avoided looking at the consumer products or hardware devices, especially because of the capital cost, right? As we talked earlier, it's really economical to build a software startup. When you start bringing in manufacturing and tool dyeing and designs and all that kind of stuff, it really inflates the cost, so it's really hard to do it through an accelerator. And it also lengthens the time, we found, right, to take kind of products to market. However, we are seeing a convergence of consumer products, hard products, and software coming together. It's getting really blurred, right? What is really the software piece or what's the hardware piece?
The Apple model.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And so therefore, every cohort, we try to find one or two companies that are kind of in the consumer products, hard product area.
And I think the other thing that Rob's been very good about working with us up in Park City is looking at, you know, what is my mentor base and how can I, you know, in addition to just here's our model, like how can I morph my model into what I'm looking at here? And maybe there's a company that doesn't fit the boom startup model exactly right down to the T in terms of the tech startup, but he finds a mentor that's really going to help make this company something different. And therefore, that they might make it through the screen. And
I'm glad to hear you say that, Rob. I noticed on Boom Startup site, I believe you used the term mentor-based investing.
Right.
And if somebody were to ask me, you know, why has Y Combinator been so successful? You know, I think with their first 10, 20 companies, you know, there's a little bit of luck in who you invite in and had some successes. But now they have this alumni network that can provide the mentoring. And I think the mentoring is so key, especially for kids that are so young, early 20s. You know, you're still trying to figure out life, let alone how to run a business. And I think the mentoring is a key. And I think, you know, Park City lends itself to mentoring because there are so many people that have had successful careers and are living in Park City because they want to live in a resort town, but they also want to give back. They don't want to do the 80-hour work weeks that they had to do to be successful. But they're happy to give advice to folks, and I think it's a good win-win for the community and for the entrepreneur. So talk to us about your alumni. Boom Startups, this will be the sixth class,
I think,
that you guys are doing. What have been some of the successes out of Boom Startup, and are those alumni participating in the program?
Yeah, we have about a 40%, 35 to 40% hit rate in terms of alumni that are coming back to the program and providing kind of mentorship. And that's actually a pretty high percentage because most of the companies, since we've only really been around for 5 years now, a lot of the companies are still building, right, their own companies. So it's difficult for them to kind of get away and give back basically to the new cohorts as they're coming through. One of the key metrics that we get measured on, is the amount of the companies, the percentage of the companies that go through the program that actually get funded, and we're pretty much spot on that rate, which is about a 65 to 70% probability that a Boom Start company will.
Is that average or is that top quartile or where
that's,
does that place
that's an average. That's okay. An average for each of the cohorts that we basically put through.
But compared to other accelerators, where does that place?
Yeah,
Boom Startup?
It depends how you measure other accelerators. So we measure ourselves against what we call the Tier 1 accelerator. So this is the Y Combinator, Techstars, and 500 Startups. And they're all in about the 70 to 75% rate. So we're pretty much right in line or slightly below.
And that kind of passes the sniff test, right? I mean, every company should get funded. There are going to be founder fights that take place. There's going to be a pivot away from, you know, a developer to developer product into a, you know, business to consumer, very different product. So not everybody should be funded, but my sense is about a third, about 40% should be funded.
Yeah, and that's one reason when people ask us, what happened to the other 30%? Well, we shut them down, or they shut themselves down, or they had a founder breakup. You know, and that's actually part of the model to prove that. Yeah, it is very, very healthy. Get out early, right, essentially. But back to your question about the alumni in Boom Startup. So, you know, Kaufman has told us an average angel investment is 8.7 years. So if you look at kind of the accelerator model, that's one expectation as an early stage angel investor that I shouldn't expect returns from my accelerator model to this 8.7 Kaufman benchmark, if you will. So being only going into our sixth year, we have a few more years, right, before we'll start probably harvesting some of our companies. Although I can share with you that we're in discussions already with a number of the companies that are actually have been approached, right, by outside parties to basically kind of acquire them. So we believe we're going to hit that kind of milestone earlier. And so the next thing that we look at is, are these companies going on and doing Series A funding, and are there valuations doubling and tripling in size. And we've seen that basically kind of class after class. So that's kind of the short-term metric that we're following and tracking now.
Great. Let's talk. You mentioned exits, 8.7 years to exit. And I think that's one area that makes it a little tougher for a Utah company. There's just not as many local companies to look at you and to buy you as there are in the Bay Area. So how do you help your companies think about exit, and how do they build a company that can be sold? Because for the vast majority of them, I think that's likely the liquidity event, right? The company that's going to go public, especially in today's world, it's a lot harder to go public, and it's no longer as attractive to go public. So what should an entrepreneur be thinking about with the end in mind?
Yeah, that's right.
How do I position this company to sell someday?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, one of the things we teach all the way through the program is the whole lean startup process. And the business model canvassing is one of the techniques that we use. And part of that canvassing opportunity is you break the business model down into these nine major segments. And one of those segments is partners and distribution. And so when we go through that segment, that's actually the point where we kind of start mentoring the entrepreneurs to really think this through. Some of your first and most earliest partners look at it from who could be a strategic acquirer, right, of that company. Let's partner with them really, really early so they can track us and follow you all the way through. And then, you know, hopefully that would be a candidate. And the nice thing about having such a diverse, you know, mentor network, we have more than 125 mentors across the state that help us with this model, is once those companies identify who those strategic partners are, we can actually go and tap into our mentor network, and you'd be amazed that somebody worked for that company, you know, 6 years ago, or they're 1 degree, 2 degree separation from somebody. And so then we bring a mentor introduction into that. And that actually starts to, you know, get a really kind of warm framework, if you will, for kind of an early exit.
If the idea day one is, if you're thinking about the exit as well, boy, thinking about who are the companies in your backyard, right? If you have a sales automation tool, well, you know, a company like InsideSales.com, if you've got data analytics, big data, a company like Domo might be a buyer. So let's transition. Let's talk about ideas, because oftentimes there's great founders and there's people that you just know. You know what? These folks know how to get things done. They can build things. They have the technical skills. They're not afraid to put in the 80-hour work weeks, or they're not afraid to live, eat, work, and breathe this company. And you just know they're going to be wildly successful. But you talk to them and they say, I don't have a business idea. How do you help them think through coming up with a good business idea?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways that we've practiced that in the past. One of them that I think is most interesting for those entrepreneurs is right here in our backyard, we've got some of the best technology commercialization, right? Then across
TCO
the whole
United, from yeah, the university.
Right, University of Utah, and, you know, Utah State as well. And so what we've recently done is we have paired up these entrepreneurs that we know are proven, that usually come with a whole team. And we've gone to the universities and taken the technology that's had millions and millions and millions of dollars put into it by all the PhDs and all the researchers. And basically, we help that spin out, because then we'll team up this founding team with that technology. And then that's a way, basically, for someone who doesn't have an idea to take something that's been pretty well vetted and a lot of money kind of spent in the research and development.
That concludes the first part of our conversation with Jeremy Lund and Rob Kuhns. Join us next week to hear the rest of the conversation. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW Studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss, with technical support by Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.